Welcome back to the Nutrition and Life podcast. My name is Lisa. I'm your host. And in today's episode, I'm speaking with fitness and women's health expert, Amanda Thiebe. Amanda and I spoke about her book, Menopocalypse: Strategies for Thriving in Midlife and What Men Need to Know About Menopause. If you like this show, please subscribe and give us a rating or share the episode with someone who might find it helpful. Thank you so much. And as always, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we are your go-to coaches. Just hit the contact link in the show notes. Now, onto my conversation with Amanda. Amanda Thiebe, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here, Lisa. Thanks for the invite.
My absolute pleasure. I think your area of expertise is so relevant to the audience. I'm looking forward to digging into everything that you're writing about, that you're teaching about. And I would love to hear from you to start off with what is the main thing you're excited for the audience to take away from our conversation?
Well, we're going to be talking about menopause, and what I would really love for women to feel at the end of this conversation is empowered. And I want them to feel capable, and I want them to feel knowledgeable as well. Because when you have those sort of three items, then you can really like go through your menopause transition and feel like you're doing the best for your body.
Amazing. Yeah, I think that's a wonderful objective for this conversation today. And Amanda, tell us a little bit about yourself to start off with. Also, how did you get to where you are today in terms of profession, but also in terms of where you live and so on?
Yeah, so you catch me from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. But I'm British born. I've lived in Canada now for like about 20, 25 years, something like that. I've always been into health and fitness, and I did, I'm from the UK and I did martial arts growing up. And so I've always been involved in it, and it was a very good like stepping stone for me. So I'm not someone that came to fitness later. So I don't, I haven't had the struggles that some women do about getting started. But I do believe in like having children, moving and exercising, because it does build good, foundational habits. And then I've always worked in the health and fitness space. I started off doing my aerobics teacher when I was like 18, but I actually had a professional career alongside. I used to work for IBM as one of their systems analysts there for quite a long time. When I had children and relocated to Canada, I focused more on my health and fitness then, and never even thought about menopause at all, Lisa, because like when you do training like we do, you do your initial training and then lots of subspecialties. And I've worked with athletes like NBA basketball players. I've worked with the seniors. I've worked with pre and post pregnancy. I've got a really good, well-rounded career, and didn't even know menopause needed to be discussed, and until I started experiencing it myself. So I'm 55 now. And when I was 42, I realized something wasn't right with my body. And I really started struggling. I was in Canada and spent 2 years in the medical system trying to get answers. What was really funny is that the medical system really supported me. I had test after test, MRIs, CAT scans, you name it, I had them all. And at the end of it, everyone kept saying, you look terrible, because I did, but we don't know what's wrong with you. And then a gynecologist, about that same time, I went to visit him about another medical condition, and he just said, I think you might be struggling with perimenopause. And so this is now, gosh, do the math, 13 years ago. And I was like, I don't understand what perimenopause is. I've heard of menopause for older women. I didn't know anything about it. And then that sort of sent me down the perimenopausal rabbit hole. And I sort of came out the other side thinking, gosh, if I didn't know anything about this, and I've got a pretty good understanding of human physiology, then most other women are not going to. We haven't had the discussion with our parents, like female parents, like our mums, our grands, our aunties. What the hell is happening? And so I just started talking about it. And I know I was like an early adopter of the menopause conversation, because I've been talking about it 10 years now. And it's now having its moment, which I love. And so I'm here for all the conversations about menopause. I'm still learning, like a lot of people. And I think it's really important to be open-minded and hear where the science is taking us. But I think it's also good for people like you and I to be very clear to women and say, the menopause conversation has shifted so quickly and so dramatically that not everything that you hear and see is accurate or can be true. And it's very confusing to be a woman in her midlife right now. And so hopefully by the end of that was a very long answer to that question, but I hope by the end of this conversation with you and I, we can show women that the basics still work. Doing all of the moving all the big rocks matter more than the small things that get thrown out to you on social media. And so they feel a bit more empowered that way.
That is a really, really important point. I think that you're pointing towards with regards to don't believe everything that you hear, because I think by now we're almost at a stage where women in their early mid-30s, whatever it might be, are becoming terrified of this. Oh no, these 10, 15 years are going to be horrible. I'm going to need for sure HRT. I'm going to need this and that. There is going to be so much more body fat around my midsection. It's going to come in. Just simply by having those underlying beliefs, we're probably limiting ourselves from like just coasting through that time, because there is going to be maybe a small, but there might be a percentage of women that are experiencing absolutely no symptoms of perimenopause. Of course, there's going to be the other extreme that is really going to struggle too. But just by having that preconceived notion of like, this is going to suck, I'm going to be suffering for 15, for 10 years or so, I think it's important to point out that that doesn't have to be the case, and that you might actually be one of the women. You, as in the listener, who's not experiencing any of this. So, yeah, thank you for that important note.
I also think that, most women nowadays in our age group, even though we're not in the same age group, but, like in, if we're talking 35 to 55, are getting their information from social media. And social media thrives on fear. Social media wants you to feel triggered because then you're bought in. It's an emotional content that's out there that's meant to make you feel, oh shit, this is going to be dreadful. And the type of conversation that I have doesn't get the clicks as well as the your brain will eat itself in menopause, which is something we heard last week. And I'm just like, hang on a minute. No, that's not what happens. And the balanced view doesn't garner the emotional response, right? And so women are now fearful, and it's crazy because we have an opportunity to provide educational knowledge for women so that they go into this, they can lean into perimenopause and menopause thinking, I got this, I know what's happening, I'm not failing, I actually have the tools and the ability to advocate for myself. That's what we want for women, but that's not what's happening on social media. And so I would just like warn women, or just give them like the heads up and say, if you see something that sounds like too scary or too good to be true, chances are it is, right?
That's very, very helpful to point out. And yeah, I do nonetheless want to get into some of the earlier symptoms that you might have experienced when that was going on, or that other women might be experiencing, because I do, from what I hear, what I have learned from speaking with various aspects experts like yourself, it's that especially those early years are confusing, because it's not a consistent pattern. It's not like every second month you're gonna skip your period, or from now on your night sweats are going to increase. It might be like you see a symptom and then it disappears for, I don't know, half a year or even two, and then it comes back, and then the frequency might decrease, or like just this undulating thing is from what I hear is what confuses people the most. Is that kind of your experience also?
Yes, that's, you've nailed it. It's exactly. It's like playing whack-a-mole with your like estrogen. It's like, what the hell is happening? You don't know how you're going to wake up feeling. Absolutely. So do you want to talk about what some of those early symptoms
Please,
might look like?
yes.
So it's really, I know you've spoken to experts, but it's always sometimes worth reiterating what happens. And by the way, I'm not a doctor and I don't even play one on TV, but what I think I do well and what I've tried to do over the last 10 years is take the medical information from all of the menopause societies and sort of humanize that and translate it. I feel like I'm now a facilitator of knowledge. And so this isn't my opinion. This is the knowledge as we know it. And we understand that, from our late 30s, so your viewership and your listeners are 35 above. And I think 35 is the perfect age to start learning about perimenopause, even if it doesn't feel tangible, right? Because it didn't for me at 35. I was like, why would I even need to know about that? But essentially, progesterone and estrogen will fall. So will testosterone. Testosterone, by the way, falls from an age-related phenomena, not because of menopause. But the two main hormones that we need to discuss are progesterone and estrogen. Progesterone will fall first and quickly, and it falls like a slide, so nice smooth slide. And progesterone is there for us to help prepare the womb to have, or the uterus to have a baby, right? And when we're going to go through perimenopause, the whole point of it is that we're not going to be reproducing anymore. It's like the ovary's last eggs kicking out, saying, come on, lady, if you want to get pregnant, this is the last chance you've got. And so, and then estrogen also starts to decline. But it falls in almost like a roller coaster manner, and not like a deliberate slide down. And it's that unexpected fluctuation of highs and lows of estrogen that likely cause most of the symptoms. At the same time, our brain is also adjusting. It changes shape, size, and structure to sort of turn off the reproductive pathways. And so, that can show up in a number of symptoms as well. And then the last part of it is that we have estrogen receptors on almost all parts of all systems in our body. And so if you think about it, when you're going through menopause, your whole body can be impacted by symptoms, it's not just your typical PMS, PMDD symptoms. So a lot of women will struggle with things like anxiety, depression, brain fog, migraines. Migraines was one of mine. Migraines with aura is another one. And sleep issues, they can be some of the main issues. And with sleep issues also comes vasomotor symptoms. But vasomotor symptoms are your hot flashes, your night sweats, and cold sweats as well are actually a symptom. And this all stimulates from the brain, right? So it's these are the brain, looking for temperature regulation, looking for energy pathways that are changing. And so it can make women feel like they don't recognize themselves, right? From like when they start all of a sudden have an anxiety they've never had before. And then other symptoms that impact the body that may be less well known are things like heart palpitations, aching joints, gut issues, changing skin, even like skin, the feeling of your skin, like ants crawling underneath your skin. It's called formication. There's like tons of like these really crazy symptoms, bleeding gums, dry eyes, tinnitus, because there's estrogen receptors there too, and the body is naturally adjusting to that. And then there's two other areas I think are worth discussing. First of all, it's the emotional impact and the symptoms that that brings up. And they're not really symptoms, but more like coping mechanisms. A lot of women really struggle to recognize themselves, or they may even feel less confident and lose their sort of mojo. And this is a real common phenomena for women through menopause. And it's quite sad, really, because they don't know where their original person has gone, you know, and it's a hard adjustment. And then last of all, the genitourinary syndrome of menopause. And I don't know if you've discussed this at length with people, but almost all women will struggle with this, and it's anything that impacts the urinary tract, the pelvic health, the pelvic floor area, and your sexual health as well. So women will have reoccurring UTIs, vaginal infections, pain with sex, receding tissue. Like, I'm not telling you your labia falls off, but it definitely retracts and it's because the whole integrity of the pelvic floor is sort of built around estrogen as well. If that is left untreated, it can be progressive. It's one of the few symptoms that doesn't actually get better in post-menopause. And so I would just recommend to women that if they start to see changes in their pelvic region, any changes, speak to the doctor about vaginal localized estrogen. And it's something that's very safe for all women, including women who have had breast cancer, according to the menopause societies, because it does stay in localized tissues, and it will mean that you won't have to suffer, right? So that's pretty much the top and bottom of the symptoms. But when women present with things like anxiety or maybe joint pain, they're two symptoms that a lot of women go experience. They may go to their doctor, who may not be menopause trained or have any information, and then treat her with anti-anxiety meds and maybe anti-inflammatory drugs. And really, that woman should be speaking to the doctor about the possibility of hormone therapy to see if she can use that or not. Not everyone's a candidate, but it should be at least be a conversation.
I want to thank you for pointing out those changes in the pelvic floor area, because I will say that many of the experts I've had on or I've talked to have spoken about, of course, things like vaginal dryness or maybe just in general libido decreasing during that time as well. Nobody, however, has spoken about the quote unquote aesthetic changes in regards to the retraction or just in general what that might mean. And so, yeah, thank you for just pointing out that that is quote unquote normal. And I think one of the most helpful reminders women can give themselves during this time in general is that there is nothing wrong with you. You're not broken. This is an absolutely, even though it doesn't feel normal, but it's a normal process at this stage of life. And that is so often
Exactly.
what I have heard is like, what's wrong with me? I don't know what's going on. I feel like there should be a different diagnosis. Like, this might not be your normal from the past few decades, but there is absolutely nothing wrong with you. You are going through a normal process. As
And
hard
the, and peri perimenopause is often called the menopause transition,
as
and it's called that for a reason. It's a temporary state, although that can last between 8 to 10 years. It doesn't mean it's easy. Statistically, 25% of women may not get symptoms, but 75% of women will. And of those 75, 25% of women will have severe symptoms. And to me, if menopause is impacting your quality of life in any way, then you should be able to have a valid conversation with your medical health provider to see if you're a candidate for treatment. But also know that there's so many things that you can do outside or alongside medical treatment that are at your disposal as well. And so I think that when we look at menopause as this 360 beast that we can tackle, then there's a lot that's within your control. And even if it feels like at the time that you're like, pissing uphill or something because it doesn't feel like it's working, you're supporting your body in the best way possible. And we can talk about some of those things as well. But yeah, like you're definitely not broken. It's definitely a change. And the one thing I would say to you is that, our bodies have gone through lots of changes. The female reproductive life cycle is a lot of changes, and our brain changes the whole time through puberty and pregnancy. This is no different. In fact, some people call this puberty in reverse, right? Because we're actually going back down to the lower levels of hormones we had prior to menopause. That's probably why we go bald as well, because I'll tell you something else. You start losing hair everywhere, apart from the chin hairs. You start growing them.
Oh, that's funny. But yeah, I think really some important information here also that you're saying, don't just straight away go to HRT or whatever it might be. Yes, those should be options potentially discussed, but let's make sure we're covering all our bases beforehand. From what I as a coach have seen or see is that during that time also our body is just less forgiving when it comes to things that it put away more easily, maybe in our 30s or 20s, let's say stress level, let's say inadequate form of exercise, too much or too little, let's say drinking a bit too much alcohol or drinking full stop, maybe a few days of inadequate eating, all of these things where you're like, oh, I was like, I didn't feel anything, or I was doing that in my 20s and 30s too. Well, now in your 40s and or 50s, the body's just not as forgiving anymore. Is this kind of what you have experienced, or
I love the way you've described that. I think that that's perfect. Like, we need to stop comparisons anyway. Stop trying to be your 20-year-old self. I don't want to be like I was when I was 20. But like, be proud of where you are at the moment. And know that, yeah, like the menopause is less forgiving than any other time, I would say. Like, it's like you do one thing wrong and then all of a sudden you've lost 4 days and you're just like, why did that happen? And so it really is important to have like a handle on most of the lifestyle interventions, because like, they do really help support you through this, right?
Yeah, so what are some of your main strategies? I mean, I should have pointed out earlier, even more so, that you have authored or written a wonderful book called The Menopocalypse. Is that
Yes,
correct?
almost. You said it with a German accent. I like that, but menopocalypse. Yeah, I like the apocalypse.
Menopocalypse, gotcha. Thank you. And yeah, so tell us a little bit about the book, and is there some strategies, some practical takeaways for the readers in there as well?
Yeah, so the book is split into two halves. The first part of the book is all about what is menopause, what can we expect, and some of the like major symptoms and changes that happen. And when I wrote this book, I am very lucky to be associated with a lot of menopause experts. So it's completely evidence-based and science-backed. And so the whole purpose of the first part of the book is to say to women, this reading this can give you agency. I need you to understand what's happening so that you then can have a valid conversation. It gives you choice, right? And then the second part of the book is leaning into the lifestyle factors, like what you can do to support your body through this time. And I broke it down into four chapters, but essentially there are five things. I just linked them up, and it's everything you just said: exercise, sleep, stress management, and sleep. And then the last one for me is also like building a resilient mindset. Like, a lot of women really struggle with the change that they're going through. How do we lean into that instead of resisting it? Because it's a rite of passage. This is an important, pivotal time in a woman's life. I don't want them to have regrets. And even when it's challenging, that can help you grow. And so, for me, though, the number one thing would be exercise, right? Exercise is something that is underutilized as a health tool. Yet you know for sure, and hopefully your community knows, that it is one of the best needle movers on all health outcomes. All health outcomes, not just menopause. And so menopause increases your risk of a lot of health illnesses and diseases that ultimately sort of kill women as they get older. Things like cardiovascular disease, well, you can reduce that by 80% with exercise. It's the number one recommendation from the American Heart Association. We become a higher risk of things like being insulin resistant, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, all these different sort of things increase by being a woman, by going through menopause, by getting older. And genetics as well, right? All of the things. And the number one recommendation for all of those things is to exercise. And so how that looks for women in menopause is different for every person. And I know we're going to talk about this, and it really matters to me, because we know that 85% of the population in North America do not meet the recommended guidelines for health and wellness. And that's from an aerobic capacity, your cardiovascular health, and your strength capacity. Then, in fact, strength training, I think, is something like 90%, 85 to 90% of people don't meet the recommended guidelines. And so we need to be talking to those women. We need to be saying to them, we can help you with that. We can give you some guidelines. And you also get to make the decision. I'm tired of going on social media and hearing things like zone two training is crap for menopausal women. All menopausal women have to do HIIT training. All menopausal women need to lift heavy shit. They need to be able to do 11 push-ups. I'm like, fuck off, all of you. It drives me crazy, because I'm like, what about the woman in your community who was previously an athlete and then is struggling to sleep at night, that is so stressed that she can't make good choices about her food, is paralyzed about going outside because she has crippling anxiety, and you've just told her she has to do 11 push-ups and has to be able to lift heavy shit? You're missing the point, and you're missing the nuance. And so to me, I'm like, how can we meet women where they are, and how can we help them feel capable again, believe in themselves again, and make progress? Because that's what we want, right? And from a personal perspective, Lisa, like, I was that woman. I've been in health and fitness all my life. I find exercising as easy as brushing my teeth. It's not hard for me to exercise. But for a 4-year period in perimenopause, I even struggled to find the motivation to go for a walk outside. I know how it feels to be stuck. And so when I hear these like sound bites, I'm just like, well, what about everybody else? You know, how does that work? And so I really want to be more respectful when we speak to women and, you know, help them understand that you might have hiccups along the way, but everything you do, it doesn't matter how big or how small, improves your health and will improve your health outcomes further down the line.
Can I just say that I love that you brought this up because I truly, well, first of all, I think people like Dr. Stacey Sims or Dr. Gabrielle Lyon and so on, they're doing a fabulous job at generally dispersing good health information when it comes to menopause. Women are different to men, and this is a topic to be talked about, yes. But exactly to your point, often things are portrayed as very black and white for social media algorithms, I presume. But it is so easy to then think, oh, I need to throw over my current training schedule completely because suddenly, even though I love zone two, I'm not allowed to do zone two anymore because this is probably the reason why I have a little bit more belly fat than I did beforehand. And like, sure, many things that they're advocating for, like the HIIT, like the lift heavy shit and all that, has a good foundation, has a good intention, most certainly, but it definitely is not applicable to everybody out there. If you love zone two, go for it. You know, if this is what brings you joy, I think the aspect of joy and health and fitness is so underrated anyway. And going back to the point of mindset and going back to the point of like, your brain is restructuring, so why not fostering those things that do enhance our day when we're struggling through so much of the rest of the day anyway? And also the notion of everyone has to lift heavy shit all the time. You know, that gets very not just toxic, but also quite dangerous if you do that all year round. They're not talking about, okay, you should probably take some weeks off. Okay, you're starting fresh or you've just had an injury. It's absolutely okay to just be doing body weight stuff. There's nothing wrong with doing Pilates for a little while. Or, you know, if you enjoy a Zumba class, is it optimal? Maybe not. But do you love it? And are your best friends in there? And it's a great community aspect. Yes. So please, like, can we stop it with the black and white? So I think it's wonderful that you touched on this topic and basically saying, you know, we don't have to listen to all of this just because some studies show that this is quote unquote optimal or not for women going through the menopause transition.
And it creates barriers. It creates barriers for women if they need to start from the beginning, or they're restarting again, or they're currently exercising and they're not quite capable of reaching those sort of. A lot of these lead people on social media are working with athletes anyway. They're not working with the general population, and I think it misses the nuance in the conversation. And I think that, you know. But if we look at the flip side of this, there are recommendations for all of us as healthy adults to try and reach. And I think that that's probably what they're trying to do. And their message is saying, you know, ideally, you know, we should have two or three strength training classes a week. You should be moving every day. You should be trying to have heart rate variability, you know. And I think that they're really important things to discuss. And especially as we go through menopause, we know that bone health is impacted. You know, women double their bone fracture risk in the first 10 years after menopause. We know that sarcopenia happens in our 30s and we lose lean body mass as we go through the decades. And that's something we want to try and either reverse or just like stop. We want to try and hang on to the lean muscle. And we also know that when women go through menopause, this emotional transition, it's really difficult for a lot of women to actually be able to exercise like they used to when they're not feeling great, when they've got chronic fatigue, which is another major symptom of menopause. And that actually translates to losing lean body mass. So we're trying to balance those scales, right, where we know where we want you to be, and these other, you know, influencers out there are trying to say, but you should be there right now. And there's a journey to get there. And we're all so very individual that I just think it just misses such a massive piece of the puzzle, right? So like it frustrates me. And a lot of the time, these research sound bites aren't based on solid data. They're based on observational data or rodent data. And that's not fair for them when. For people to say you have to train a specific way when we really have better data from men and women that show that Women can lose weight in menopause. Women can build and maintain muscle. Women can improve their cardiovascular health all through menopause. They don't have to train specifically any differently, but you've got so many different hurdles and barriers that you're facing that having some auto-regulation, which we can talk about, like checking in, going, how do I feel today? Am I able to do my 10K run, or am I maybe going to have to just do a brisk walk instead? That's looking for those daily wins, right? How can you feel like you're achieving and moving forward without, crapping all over yourself for not meeting the goals that are the high expectation goals?
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you for clarifying it in that way. And I'd like to talk a little bit about those brain changes that you touched on a few times, and just in general the mental aspect of things, because I could believe, and I do want the male listener who hopefully is still listening into this conversation now, I want to bring them into the picture in the sense of well, I guess both parties, let's say the woman is going through these struggles of not feeling like herself, mood swings, anxiety, all of that, like what's happening with me. I can imagine, I mean, obviously that's very difficult for her, but I can imagine that for a partner, it's also like, this is not the woman that I've been with for the last, I don't know, 20 years. What's going on there? How can I support her? Or even just some background information. Maybe you can shed some light on all of this.
So I actually did a TEDx talk, and it was Should Men Talk About Menopause? That was exactly the theme of it. And the answer is yes. And one of the stories I talk about in there is when I had that 2 years in the medical system trying to get answers and actually didn't get any, despite people really wanting to help me. P.S. The medical community are not trained in menopause. I went and met my husband for lunch afterwards, and I sat down and he said, how was everything? How are you doing? And I went, well, apparently I'm in perimenopause and I have depression and I have migraines with aura. And yeah, that's it. And he turned around to me and said, thank God for that. I thought you were going to leave me. And it was like, oh no, it makes me so sad. And it's because the person that he married was floundering and not thriving, and he didn't know how to help. He didn't know, if you've got a male partner, the patriarchal sort of like view that they have, and I'm saying this in a respectful way, not calling out the patriarchy, is that they want to fix and help. And this is something that can't be fixed, right? But it's really nice to have support and empathy. And so I really leaned into that when I was like going through menopause and creating allyship for those people that, will never experience menopause but want to be supportive. To me, it's the best way to approach this. And so if it's a partner or children at home, be very open about it. I think I'm going through perimenopause. Like the book I wrote, which you mentioned called Menopocalypse, it came out during COVID when my husband was sat, he's an executive in a company, speaking to people across the globe. And at the end of it, he would show my book and say, hey guys, you should read this book that he's just like my favorite, like sell, he's a good promoter. And he would show this book. And within the book, there's a 12-week strength training program because I wanted women to understand that, it's doable and you can do it at home, et cetera. And some of the guys in the who he sent it were doing the workouts as well and were like, yeah, I think my wife might be, I'm going to get her to read the book. And actually going to your partner and saying things like, I just learned about menopause today. It's so fascinating. Do you want to talk about it? Like, or as a male coach or a male trainer, you can even say to your 35 to 55-year-old like crowd, hey, like I've been reading about menopause and I just want you to know that I'm an ally and I'm here to support you. And then it might help you also be a better coach and to like, so that woman that comes to see you wants to always feel better when she leaves, doesn't she? She never wants to feel worse. And so if you see that she's having a bad day and she's struggling, you could even pair things back and go, why don't we work on some biomechanics today? Why don't we look at your hinge form and just look at her and watch what she's doing? Because that's what a good coach will do. And if you feel like she's ready to push a bit more, then do it. But like have that compassion. And maybe she's not up to dump doing lots of jumps like power moves and jumping because she might pee herself. Like that happens, right? The whole integrity of the pelvic floor is impacted. And if she's not getting treatment for it and she can't jump, then that maybe is a an opportunity to connect with her and say, hey, that's fine. You don't need to jump to, today to do the workout. We can do alternative exercises. And did you know that this is really common and that happens in perimenopause? I read this article on it. You should go and see a pelvic health physiotherapist. Like, actually engage in the conversation because that will be well received if you do it in a respectful way. And my kids, who are like 18 and 22, when they were at high school, I remember one of my sons was in a psychology class, and the question was, does anybody know what time of a life a woman goes through where she might have some brain changes, like where the anxiety and depression shows up? And nobody knew at all. And my son was like this. He put his hand up and he went, menopause. And it was such a proud mummy moment. But it's just like when we normalize what menopause is, then it's not a stigmatized conversation. If you're a male coach or you're a male partner of someone that's going through pregnancy, we talk about that very openly. So why can't we do the same about menopause? And we are. It's changing for sure.
Yeah, I am so glad that it is changing, and I really think it's actually quite tangible, or the generation has shifted so much. And I think if we still have the belief of like men are not interested in that topic, that old belief of like, oh, they don't even want to hear about period symptoms, or like things like if you can't talk about those kind of things with your partner, with your husband, or even other family members, that's I don't want to say that's sad. Everybody's different. Everybody has their own style of communication. But from what I have observed from the men that I have encountered throughout my life, it is actually becoming, they're actually interested. They actually want to know. They're not these gray, old people from the 50s or whatever, where it's like, no, we don't want to hear anything of what's going on down there, or,
You remember when women would have babies in hospital, the men would sit in the
separately.
corridor, and now they're deep down in the thick of
They
it.
want to know.
It's just, yeah. And so I'm like just saying to women, you will be very surprised at how connected your partners want to be if you have a male partner, because they may want to try and fix it and sort it out for you. And you can tell them, I don't need that, but I do need your support. I can't do today. I need you to make dinner. Anything. And I think that having open conversation will also help when it comes to things like connectivity, like for desire as well. When you're like, because libido, I think you mentioned it, is something that goes straight away. And libido and desire go together. They're separate things that connect. And so when you're not connected with your partner, chances are, you're going to lose that intimacy. And so you can lean into it a little bit and, have your hugs, have your snuggles and stuff like that. And it can really help you feel like you're not going through this in isolation.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, your example was a wonderful example of like, otherwise, if you don't talk about it, the partner just thinks like, what's going on with her? Is she unhappy in the situation in general? Does she want to move? Does she want to have a career change? Is this because of like, if our brains are designed in that way to just like keep spinning until we find a solution or a response. And so just having that open conversation. And I always say that it applies to anything. Even if you want to lose weight, and if you don't talk about it with your husband or with your partner, it makes it so much harder, and you keep putting out these lame excuses about stuff. Whereas if you say like, "Hey, honey, I'm making it my goal to look after my health a bit better than I have been. I'm doing this and this and that, and I won't be having alcohol on a nightly basis anymore." Like, oh, okay, cool. Well, I'll support you, or maybe
They'll
he'll,
probably join you. Yeah,
or
that's
that,
what happened to me. I stopped drinking. I had really severe migraines with aura, and every time I had a drink, I would get a migraine. And I didn't drink very much either, like one or two drinks, two or three times a month. Like, it wasn't even that regular. And then it would also really bring on my depression, because I wasn't sleeping properly with it. So I just gave it up, and it was very easy for me to give up because I wasn't a large drinker. And my husband at first was like, well, that's going to be awkward when we go out drinking with friends. And I was like, well, I don't care because I don't. But then it seems now that like things like this are so much easier because of all of the options. And when you go out socializing, there's alcohol-free options. Now my husband doesn't drink either. He just copied. He's like, yeah, it's fine. I mean, I do miss the buzz,
Well, it is sometimes about choosing the lesser evil, right? And you're just choosing to not have those symptoms, and so it
exactly.
might not be
It was
always
an
fun.
easy decision for me, but I also think that, like just being very open about it, going back to your point, does make it easier. Like if you're on a weight loss journey and it means that you're going to be cooking different food, that your partner might want to join you.
Exactly. Well, Amanda, thank you so much for all the wisdom you've shared with us. I will link everything into the show notes, especially also the link to your book. And hopefully, people, women and men alike, are going to go and check it out. Not just what menopause is, but more importantly for me, it's always about the application. What can we do about it, mindset-wise, and all of that. So, thank you so much. It's been a true pleasure chatting with you.
Thank you so much, Lisa. Take care.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Amanda. Thank you so much for tuning in. Go and give us both a follow. And remember, if you want help with your nutrition and fitness goals, we'd love to guide you. One more thing before you go. If you're looking for premium supplements, our partner, Fat Muscle Project, has got you covered. Head to their website for the best protein powders, creatine, vitamin D, and more. And feel free to use our code NCL for your chance to win a $250 gift card every month. Thank you for listening.